You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 480 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carthino.
And we're coming to you in different locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the League's Cup champion, Seattle Sounders. I mean,
oh,
sort of.
Everybody remembers that almost as much as they remember Jerry Rice's tenure on the Seattle Seahawks. It's the Jerry Rice edition for
it
number
is.
80.
Taking it from Steve Largent. You didn't say where you're from, though.
I'm from Renton, Washington, home of the playing a game this weekend, Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, you're also from the home of Sounders FC, is that is their headquarters in Renton. So,
really?
Yeah, we've talked about
this,
haven't we?
Tukwila.
No, we've talked about this. Officially, they are in Renton.
Okay. They're at Starfire, but they're like the Renton side
no,
of Starfire.
No, they're not in Starfire anymore. They're at Longacres.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. So, we'll start there. Congrats to Sounders FC on completing their North American trophy case by beating Inter Miami 3-0 in Sunday's League's Cup championship game, adding that trophy to the Lamar U.S. Open Cup, which they've won 4 times, MLS Cup, which they've won twice, CONCACAF Champions Cup, back when the name competition was known is the CONCACAF Champions League, and they did it Sunday in front of a record 69,314 fans, but not you. Because you and Leo Messi can never be in the same place at the same time.
That's a good point that you make.
Actually, well, you're blonde. You were in the same place as Leo Messi before, previously, for 2 matches.
Is he not blonde right now?
No, I'm saying once you've been blonde, you can't be in the same place as him.
Okay. I saw none of this match. You were like, we're going to do this semi-emergency pod about the Sounders. And I'm like, oh, did they play a game?
You had to be aware of it.
I checked the score. I pulled up the score and I was like, oh, well, kick their ass. Also,
did.
I heard there was a brawl after the game.
You did. Well, you'll never guess who was involved.
Oh, I'm aware. Don't think those of us are not still upset about Luis Suarez. He should have been banned from the sport after the 2000 and what year World Cup?
Oh, I don't know. It was a long time ago. I think it was 14.
Okay.
Against the Italian national team when he bit our guy, Chiellini.
Yeah, Luis Suarez never.
I mean, that wasn't a losing cause. That was
2014 when he bit Chiellini. That should have been out of the sport completely. And Luis Suarez keeps doing it. So
oh, yeah,
I saw that and I had ire, for what it's worth. I was like, I'm pro Messi, but I am anti Suarez.
Well, Messi, it was funny.
He's Italian.
It is true. It is true. Was not part of the confrontation whatsoever. Was calmly talking on the side to Obed Vargas, who had physically marked him out of the game much of the time.
Leo Messi was talking to Obed Vargas?
Yeah.
I don't think Leo Messi is trying to get into a brawl after the
He's not.
Finale.
No. I mean, he's not trying to get into a brawl after anything. You know, that's not who he is. That is who Suarez is. But, so Messi
I'm watching
did
a highlight
have.
of Chiellini showing his shoulder of the bite.
Did he get red carded?
On.
I can't remember. Did he even get thrown out?
No, I think there was like no. Suarez was later handed a 4-month ban from all football activity. Just having a biting problem? Come on.
it's not great when you're an adult. It's okay when you're a child to have a biting problem. But
Suarez acting like Chiellini's flesh hurt his teeth never gets old.
It is true. It is an excellent point.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah, is the Italian players protested to the referee for not penalizing Suarez. Uruguay won a corner and scored, winning 1-0 to eliminate Italy.
This is
so,
like
not a happy memory.
Did they have VAR back then?
I don't know if they had VAR back then. But that's not what we're here to talk about. So before this, we had previewed this match.
It's the last soccer match I remember.
We had previewed this match on last week's pod and talked about sort of the contrast between Inter Miami with all their stars and Sounders were playing without basically all of their stars due to injury. Albert Rushnak was in the 18, but only in case of penalty kicks. Did not see any action in this one. Jordan Morris obviously still out injured. So, you know, I don't think they had any of their 3 designated players. And yet, so Brian Schmetzer delivered some bars leading into this game. Messi is arguably the best player the world has ever seen, but we have Paul Rothrock,
Oh, yes.
and we have Jackson Reagan, and we have Snyder Brunel and Andrew Thomas. We've got good players too.
I love it.
And the Sounders, like, there have been some fair legitimate criticisms of the Sounders off the field, including earlier this year with the way that Adrian Hanauer handled the players' protests over the FIFA Club World Cup and the distribution of funds there.
Do you
Thankfully, no
think I've
such
forgotten
issues with
about
the Leagues
that?
Cup.
Because
I
I
know
have
you're,
not
I'm aware
forgotten
you have
about
not
that.
forgotten about that. The players seem much more over it now. This one they nailed. They got a promotion before this game. If you bring in your Leo Messi Inter Miami jersey to the team shop, first 100 get a Paul Rothrock jersey.
That's really funny. Do you feel like people did that?
They said they sold out.
I mean, 100 is not very many, so.
It's not that many because this was again the largest crowd that has ever watched a soccer game in the state of Washington, slightly larger than the 2019. I mean, they've sold out many times, but the 2019 MLS Cup final, the 2022 CONCACAF Champions League final, by all accounts, an amazing atmosphere. But then for Rothrock, I mean, I don't know if we want to go a full recap here.
I don't think we do, but I think the question you have to ask yourself is, it's not, can they do it on a rainy night in Stoke? It is, can Leo Messi do it on a pretty nice night in Seattle, Washington?
On the turf.
And the answer is clearly no. I mean, pulling up the score, it wasn't even close, right? I
Well,
mean, tell me about the match.
okay, but let's start with this. Paul Rothrock,
Yes.
like you, like me, both of us, the Belton brothers were all there, the famous cousin Katie, I believe, too, was at the friendly versus FC Barcelona and Messi during the Sounders' inaugural MLS season.
Just as a fan.
I mean, he was a small child.
Okay.
You understand that we're very old, right?
I
We
guess I don't
weren't
know how
even that
old
old
Paul
back
Rothrock
then.
is.
You understand that we are too old to be playing professional soccer, and we weren't that old in 2009. Paul Rothrock is currently
26.
26, so in 2009 he would have been 10. So, truly an amazing story. So the Sounders get the lead.
Oh, I mean, incredible that a person who from Lakeside High School could manage to make it into the MLS.
No, okay.
Sorry.
Osaze De, I mean, I don't know if they're known for MLS specifically. Osaze De
Still,
Rosario,
think he might have had many opportunities.
probably so, headed home in Alex Rodon cross for the opening goal in the 27th minute. Sounders then had a really good opportunity to double it. Jesus Ferreira missed off the post late in the first half. Sounders completely dominated the first half, very few dangerous chances for Miami. But Miami then came out of the locker room really strong, only down one goal at that point, had the better play coming out of the locker room. And Messi misses a sitter, basically. As third Belton brother Zach Jabal mentioned on the Discord, he kind of wandered it from Chris Wondolowski and possibly also the 2014 World Cup. I don't know. Maybe all things happened maybe that's the World Cup of record, although it should be
It is
2006.
2006. You stop. It is 2006 or 1994. There is no other World Cup of record.
I mean, you don't actually remember 1994, so I'm pretty sure it's not
But
the
I will
World Cup of
accept it.
record. But puts it over the crossbar, high. Some other good opportunities there. But then 82nd minute, Georgie Meningo off the bench earns a penalty. Kind of a funny situation where Christian Roldan, the Sounders captain, grabs the ball ahead of this penalty. It's unclear who's going to take it because Albert Rusnak, their usual penalty taker, is on the bench. Danny Musovski, their next in line. I guess Musovski has taken the one that they had last week to get him a hat trick, but is the forward would be next in line. He's suspended. He's not out there. So very unclear who was going to take it. And then Alex Roldan is a defender. Christian gives it to his brother Alex, the kind of gesture we would never see on the Pelton cast. And Alex Roldan converts the penalty to double the lead. And then in the 89th minute, Paul Rothrock capped it with the goal. He had to score after the we have Paul Rothrock situation. It was just the storybook ending until the fracas at the end of the match.
How good is Inter Miami overall, right? They're mostly just like have been a pretty good team throughout the season. Obviously, they have Suarez and Messi, but like as a team overall,
I
this is
mean,
not like a massive upset.
it's an upset. I mean, the fact that the Sounders had home field, that Miami had to fly across the country after playing on Wednesday, like those were all things that worked to the Sounders' advantage. I mean, Yeah, Miami, his regular season performance has been very much, I would say, up and down in the Messi area, but era, but they were going for their second Leagues Cup title. I believe they advanced in the Club World Cup, where the Sounders were competitive but did not come up with any results. Let's see here. What was their Club World Cup results? Miami won their group ahead of Monterrey, River Plate, and Urawa Red Diamonds. And then in the knockout stages, they lost 4-0 to PSG. So that's going to happen.
Fair enough.
But
I did not know that Mascherano was their coach too.
yeah, that was a big story because he was coaching from the stands during the semifinal after being sent off.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot going on with Inter Miami. Always a story. But anyways, I feel like I'm clearly on talent the best team in MLS. And it's not like this is just a situation where they're a complete paper tiger. They have at times been completely dominant, but not an enormous upset for the Sounders to win. I don't know what the pregame line was for this one.
But I assume the score, I mean, winning 3-0 was
Yes.
pretty surprising. Do you feel like that? Were you watching this?
Yes.
What was the general? Because I was wondering about that, where I was like, are people who going to this, do they want to watch to see Messi lose? Or like, was it mostly Sounders fans? That's
It
what I
was
was kind
mostly
of
Sounders
fascinated.
fans. The estimates on the Discord from people who were there were in the range of 70-30 or 80-20 Sounders fans.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think you probably had, if we're actually dividing it, you had some group of like people wearing Messi jerseys, but also kind of want the Sounders to win, that sort of thing. Like we see that with Caitlin Clark when she comes to town to play against the Storm. It's like, I want Caitlin Clark to do well, but I also kind of want the Storm to win. I mean, it would definitely like, it became an event. How quickly it sold out, the seats that the Sounders kept putting on sale, the most attended game in League's Cup history. Not that that was a high bar. And again, this felt like a real thing, even though the competition is of questionable seriousness, particularly for, and Inter Miami played this to win without question. It wasn't for lack of effort. It was just the combination of how well the Sounders executed their game plan defensively. Obed Vargas was just tracking Messi and, physical against him throughout the full 90. And then, frankly, the fact that the referee let a lot go played in the Sounders' advantage. Like if they had been called some yellows in the first half for persistent fouling, maybe the match ends up looking a little different. And if Messi scores to tie the match, maybe it looks entirely different. Because one of the things that did happen is Miami, in their desperation to score a goal and equalize, Mascherano took off two defenders and replaced them with attacking players over the course of this game. And that's part of what put Georgi Manungo in situation to draw the penalty. So, soccer more than probably any sport is subject to sort of the vagaries of how the game flows, in addition to just the pure randomness of, when you have a finisher like Paul Rothrock, of course he's going to put it in the back of the net, in the way that somebody like Leo Messi, facing the pressure of the League's Cup final, may not be able to, in 69,000 hostile fans. I mean, that's a lot to ask of Leo Messi. You're not gonna wink at this at all.
No, not at all.
So, per
It's
sounder at heart,
fine. I probably would have been cheering for Miami.
per sounder at heart, Rothrock is in the final year of his contract, currently negotiating an extension. There's a great anecdote in the book, The Jordan Rules, about during timeouts in game five in the 91 NBA Finals, when John Paxson is hitting shots. The players are yelling to Jerry Krause about the cost of his next contract going up. And that's what was happening here with Paul Rothrock, I'm sure.
There we go.
I mean, the other thing about this is Brian Schmetzer did it again. He was not at the helm for any of these US Open Cup wins, but the MLS Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League, now this League's Cup triumph. Like, I've been taking notes. The meme of Ryan from The Office taking notes? That's been me paying attention to anyone who has doubted Brian Schmetzer over the last few years here, or the Sounders strategy in general, I would say, which continues to deliver good results even as people complain about their lack of notable transfers or, their spending keeping up with the likes of Inter Miami and LAFC, which just added Sun. They've been able to develop talent that has been able to go up against these, super teams. And often be competitive with them and often take them down. And Schmetz now elevates himself to right there at the top of the list of all-time Seattle sports coaches for a local guy to be doing this after having played for the team. It's just awesome, and I love how much it means to Brian Schmetzer.
Do you feel like this is a moment for, I mean, obviously this is just Seattle because the Sounders were involved, but you mentioned like Sun coming over and joining LAFC, the amount of stars that are on Inter Miami, the age is getting a little bit younger of the types of players who are coming over. They're not quite as aged as they were before. Do you feel like this is a bit of a moment for MLS in general right now?
I think the fact that they did as well, like, obviously the timing, I think we talked about this before, the timing of Leagues Cup, which is early in the Liga MX season, whereas, MLS teams are in mid-season form. You contrast that to the CONCACAF Champions League or now Champions Cup, where it's reversed, where MLS teams are just getting started and Mexican teams therefore tend to dominate that competition. But still, the fact that MLS did as well in this competition as they did, I think, is a pretty impressive sign for where the league is right now and the strength of it as it continues to grow. And that's ahead
Is the
of,
expansion continuing? Like, what is the number for MLS?
I don't know if there are additional expansion teams set to come online.
They're at 30 right now, right?
We're still
Which is
waiting for
like
that Sacramento team.
30 is a pretty reasonable number for a league.
There might be one coming in Detroit, but you're ahead of the 2026 World Cup, which is clearly what they are viewing as their opportunity to kind of level up and take another step forward in the sporting, in the American sporting hierarchy. So, yeah, I think this is a bit of a moment
Do
for
you feel like they
MLS.
have? Because to me, I don't feel like soccer in general has like grown that much necessarily as far as profile among the sports. And I question whether the Apple deal has been helpful or not, partially just because it was like this is a match against Messi that I didn't see overall. But I'm not sure if it's like supplanted any of the other sports or taken up a larger percentage. And some sports, like if you were to ask me the sport that probably grew the most in the last handful of years. I think college football is only getting bigger, something like that, where it's like, we know where the NFL is, we know where college football, we know what baseball is. But I haven't seen soccer increase that much overall, but the stars are getting bigger.
I do think that the Apple TV deal has been an issue for them and is probably something they regret. And that's also relevant as you think about
You think it's
the,
something they regret?
I don't know if they fully regret it, but I don't think they had thought through the some of the implications in terms of just like limiting the disc. Like you might have turned on, if this was on FS1, there's a chance you might have turned it on. There's no chance that you're going to watch it if
I
it's
was at
strictly on
LS
Apple
soccer
TV.
game.
I mean, yes, I'm aware that you were out, but you know what I'm saying.
I was watching better soccer than Leo Messi.
Many kids thought that Leo Messi was there at the match.
I thought about wearing the Leo Messi jersey and I was like, no, that's weird.
Anyways, I do think that that has hurt them, and it's relevant when we think about the path not taken for the big for the Pac-12 and the
Oh,
last big point in the
we
Big
know who's in the
Ten.
right. Also, I just love I could talk about conference realignment forever,
Oh no,
but
I got you started. That's what you would have filled the
I
entire
love
space where I had to step away.
condescension that I have about conferences so fast, where I'm like, there's no power four, there's a power two, and actually there's a power one.
Wow,
I'm
you're
like,
not even willing to concede the SEC. Texas loses one game at
I'm willing to
Ohio
concede
State.
that it's a conference. I'm like, there's a power one. The only difference is not that any school in any of the other conferences would be happy to be in any of the two conferences, but it's not like any school in the SEC would immediately be in the Big Ten if they could. But
That does seem unlikely.
I will say that the balance of power is just how quickly I'm like so condescending about the Big Ten and what it means and being part of the power too.
Lifelong Big Ten guy. Well, let's transition there as we close out this toast to the Sounders and say congrats to Big Ten co-offensive player of the week, Jonah Coleman, who
Hello.
rushed for 177 yards and two touchdowns in the Huskies' opening win over Colorado State. We will not do that one semi-emergency side style.
I was happy to. But I
We'll
will
talk about it
say
in the Husky section.
the thing about Jonah Coleman's performance is I felt like it kind of left some meat on the bone.
Wow.
And I don't, were you, did you watch this at all?
I watched the entirety of the second half and parts of the first two quarters and listened to parts of the first two quarters I was driving home from the Storm
I'm
game.
curious what it was success rate wise, because it was kind of like he had big chunk plays,
Right.
and I think that Jonah could have. He also had a long reception as well. He went for almost 200 total yards of offense, but I felt like Jonah could have gained even more yards in this game.
I mean, is that a testament to obviously you're playing against Colorado State? This is not a Big Ten opponent, to your point there. Not even a Power Four school. But that
I've
is
never
that
heard of the
testament.
Power Four.
Is the not even the modest two? The Power Two, the modest two, and then everyone else? I don't know. Is this a testament to the improvement of the Huskies' offensive line?
I have no idea. How would I know that? They're playing Colorado State.
Okay. Well,
I the
dynamite drop
line
in.
looked pretty good, is what I'll say. I don't, we're not talking about the Huskies yet. I want to talk about the Huskies when we talk about the Huskies.
All
But
right,
that was
fair.
specifically Jonah Coleman. We're going to talk about the line, everything. I have thoughts.
Oh, okay. Well, lastly, in our toast this week, I should also mention Christian Rolland, toast to him getting called up by the USMNT for their two friendlies during this international break. So the Sounders will have some time off. The rest of the Sounders who are not called into international duty will have some time off. Brian Schmetzer gave them 5 days off of practice. So that's a nice little carrot for winning this championship. But congrats to him. Lastly, congrats to Sue Bird, who will
Oh,
officially be
God.
inducted in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame this weekend,
What more do they have to do? We've got a
continuing the
street.
summer of
We've got
Sue.
a statue. Good God. Okay, we get it, Sue Bird. You are good at basketball.
Wow. Wow,
I'm
really
just
taking the
like,
anti-Sue
how many
Bird
congrats?
position.
It's not an anti. You're the one who's anti-Sue Bird performance-wise, of course. But it's just like I thought we were gonna have another thing that the Storm were doing.
No,
Wait,
this
so
is not a Storm-specific
she's
thing.
being inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, is that what you said?
Yes, the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. Monster class, Maya Moore and Sylvia Fowles going in alongside her from the WNBA.
So that's going to be next summer that she goes in?
No, like it was announced a long time. It's happening on Friday.
Okay, it's happening. How the Storm haven't done any sort of like ceremony for this? Are they
Not
sure?
specifically. I guess they probably will. I mean, honoring Sue, I don't remember it at
I
one
mean,
of
they
the
haven't
games that
honored
I've been
Sue
at.
yet, so, you know,
Yeah.
it'd be important to do.
Yeah, it's good to it would be good if they did that. So there you go. Summer of Sue. Obviously, like I wrote about this earlier this week, and it kind of snuck up on me because the Seattle Times was running a bunch of Sue Bird stories this week, and I was like, wait, why are they doing that all of a sudden? And this obviously is the
We
reason.
have to change the name of the city?
Let's not rule it out. Let's keep it on the table. That could be summer of 2026. All right, with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Since it's week one of the NFL season, and to celebrate Mike Shon being on last week talking about the Legion of Boom era Seahawks, I want to talk about the end of those years, the 2018 to 2020 range. You remember those?
I do.
I know who doesn't remember them, and that's basically any other member of the Seahawks defense. But this was a time period when the records overall were pretty good, Russ was cooking, and the defense fucking sucked. But we just assumed they were good because they had been, and they had to be because that's what we were told for years. But it was a hard awakening to realize the offense had outlasted and surpassed the Seahawks defense and were carrying the team. And that's where we get to the 2025 Seattle Mariners, a team who I've heard places like the Seattle Times laughably say has no holes, which is great if you don't factor in pitching and defense. We're now far enough into the season to assume that these numbers won't transform drastically. And ultimately, the pitching staff is 19th in WAR, 18th in FIP, bottom half of the league in basically everything. And behind them, in the same way the Seahawks fell, is a bad defense. They're more or less Cal Raleigh, Julio, and then a whole host of Tedrick Thompsons and Leno Hills out there.
Ooh.
They rank bottom five in fielding run value, 28th in outs above average, and are a bottom third defensive team by basically any other metric. And I know there are people out there who are going to say the flip from Williamson to Geno is a factor. But at least Geno has been a positive defender this season. Can't say the same for Cole Young, Jorge Polanco, Josh Naylor, sadly Dom Canzone, J.P. Crawford, Mitch Garver, and a whole Rangers roster of players who have been released. And what did those, on average, I believe, 10-5-1 seasons tell us? That while you can be top in offense and squeeze your way into the playoffs, it's not enough. And we have to be looking at this Mariners team and asking the very serious question of whether they're even any good. Because for this team, there isn't a Ken Norton to scapegoat. And a loss in round one is about the best we can ask for.
Welcome. I'm glad you've made it here. I've been here. I haven't been here all along. It's not like I thought that the pitching staff was bad last season. But
the pitching staff, you were wrong last season and you're right now.
I never said that the pitching, to be clear, I never said that the pitching staff was bad last season. I just said that they were overrated. This season, they are actively bad. This is prior to today's game. So they've probably dropped at least four spots. Before today's game, they were 23rd in ERA in road games. And obviously the defense, to your point, is part of that. But the pitching is also a pretty big part of that. But
I'm talking, FIP isn't good either. That's the thing.
Right. No, I mean, nothing about it is good. Like, I do think
the ERA is worse. They're a little bit better when you look at the, like, advanced stats, but they're still not even good in those.
All right, so let's unpack this. Number one, there is limited
We're unpacking
reason
hot takes now?
No, Mariners pitching staff. George Kirby gave up 8 runs in 2 innings, man. And you didn't invent this. This is a cold take as well. Number one, there is not much reason to believe that the Mariners should be a fundamentally different team in terms of their overall quality in road games than home games. Like, the idea that some teams are actually better at home or on the road is probably not accurate. It is probably almost entirely samples. And no, in any sport. I mean, some teams have unique home field advantage. A couple of teams might have unique home field advantages in certain sports. But that's very rare and far between. And so usually what happens when you have these big differentials between home performance and road performance is a lot of it is just randomness. And the example of this in the Mariners case that I pointed out on the Discord the other day, the Mariners record in one run games at home versus on the road. Let me see. Run did not pull it up. It is dramatically different. 20-7 in one run games at home after Tuesday night, 8-14 in one run games on the road. So neither of those is like the real team. The real team is somewhere in the middle of both of those and would make the home and road records look a lot different. Now, third Pelton brother Noah Cohen has raised a fair point that maybe it's the humidity. Maybe the Mariners just simply cannot handle the humidity.
They've looked really hot in all of these games. Every time you look at them, it's just like, this is the hottest team I have temperature wise that I have ever seen.
It is a legitimate difference, much as the rain affected the Seattle Seahawks in a unique way in home games during the Russell Wilson era and the Geno Smith era.
Because this did start over the summer, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they were abnormally bad in road games in April and May.
It's been like the last 2 months.
And also, we need, you know, they were playing in the climate-controlled confines of the whatever Minute Maid Park. Is it still that in Houston? That's
what we say to Mr. Every Owner around the league. Build the dome.
Tampa Bay did build the dome. Unfortunately, the roof collapsed. It was blown off during a hurricane, which is a very serious, real thing, and that's why they're playing these games outdoors. But suffice it to say, it did not work. So that's point one.
That's point one. Wait, which was the point? That the team shouldn't humidity was point one, or
no, that they're getting somewhat unlucky on the road and somewhat lucky at home. And the difference between the Mariners is not at home and on the road is obviously not as large as it seems. Point two is that the pitching, you can't just measure the quality of a team's pitching, even if they're in an extreme ballpark like T-Mobile Park or Coors Field, based on road performance because of that random element. How you perform at home, once adjusted for those park factors, is a meaningful indicator. So the fact that they are as bad as they are in road games is not necessarily quite as damning of the pitching staff as it looks. But point three is, like, One of the conversations of the Discord today was like, good teams go through stretches like this. And my argument would be, what evidence is there that the Mariners are a good team and
No,
that
the run
the streak
differentials.
that they had in August isn't also equally fluky?
I mean, run differential is way worse than any of the other teams in their territory, right?
It's
The
not way
other
worse
teams.
than any of the other teams in their territory. It's way worse than any of the other teams in their territory, but one. That team being the Houston Astros, who you sniffed it out. The Astros are completely fraudulent. It's just the Mariners, they are who we thought they are, and the
Even more
Mariners might be
fraudulent.
letting them off the hook.
Sure,
Yes.
yes. The Astros and the Royals are the two teams, but like the Rangers, the team who should be leading the ALS.
They're plus 90, third best in the entire American League.
I will say, I'll give credit to preseason. I think it was FanGraphs. It was one of those projection systems, really liked the Rangers. And it was just like,
Yeah.
what are you talking about? And for the most part, I think they predicted it would be a very close AL West. And I think the Rangers might have had the edge in a lot of them. Kind of had it right. That's the thing about baseball is you just have to wait till the end, and the projection systems often know more than our feeble brains. But the projection systems liked the Mariners as of like a month ago, and I don't think could have imagined how bad they've been on these road trips. Like these are not
Well,
like
they could have imagined. I mean, it's one of the scenarios, but that's why their probability of making the playoffs is still 77% now because of the fact that their strength of schedule is relatively weak the rest of the way. I think that FanGraphs by this point, we have to say is overestimating the Mariners' inherent talent, I would say. But also, they've banked the games that they won. They are still ahead in the wild card race and have a chance to win the AL West because the Astros have not pulled away there. So those combinations still mean they're in a favorable spot, but obviously a way less favorable spot than had they actually won some games recently.
just thank God for that three-game series against the Rockies. I the Mariners just have to do good baseball sometime pretty soon, and that has yet to be seen.
I feel a lot about the Mariners like I do about the Storm. Like there's reasons for optimism, but at some point you have to win the games.
I think the person in leadership of both teams, I feel the same way about them.
Oh,
I
that
feel the
is
same. I feel the same way about Harry Ford's playing time that I do about Dom Malunga's. Maybe it was injury related against the Sparks, but.
yeah, I mean, her free throws were way off. Clearly her wrist was affecting her in that game. And as Megabogor did, and she had five fouls is the other part of it in terms of her
Okay, fair
playing
enough.
time.
But the plus 14 was not affecting her.
She was
I like that we're just
I don't
talking
think
about
she
the
had a
Storm.
plus
The Mariners, we
14
used to talk about
effect.
the Mariners in other segments because we cared about the Mariners. And now we're talking about the
Are
Storm in the Mariners segment.
we a Storm
We're not a Mariners
podcast?
podcast anymore.
I love it. I love it.
I mean, they have to win the series against the Braves this weekend. Like, they don't, it's, I guess, they don't have
They
to.
should. It would be good if they won a game. They should just win a game. Let's start there. A game. Harry Ford, to your point, is on the roster. The Mariners called up Harry Ford and Leo Rivas while releasing Donovan Solano on September 1st. Why exactly Donovan Solano was no longer worth a roster spot on September 1st, but still worth one on August 29th, or whenever it was that Victor Robles
The
went on the
freaking
suspended
Stros are going to
list,
win
is
this game
unclear.
too. Okay. I sure the team is just bad. Their coach bad. They're bad. They're a bad team. They can't pitch. They can hit.
They're not a bad team because they have Cal Raleigh and they have Julio Rodriguez and they have Randy Arozarena and they have
Well,
Gino.
I mean, Randy's defense is like he's almost number one perpetrator of. He's been a pretty good hitter. He's been overall valuable for the year, but like the
I
defense has
read
been.
in a book called Moneyball that defense doesn't matter. That was the takeaway there, right? Defensive
That's a
base
great.
running. Dan Wilson did not read Moneyball, or maybe he hate read Moneyball. I don't know. Unclear. But just like when
I mean, I
Polanco
don't think we
finally.
want him to read Moneyball at this point, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree that's a bit outdated, yes. But the stolen bases, the bunts, I still want him to read Moneyball. I've got to be honest. Dan Wilson may not have gotten to that point that is outdated.
He would be so desperate to trade for this Euclid kid.
When Jorge Polanco finally got a base hit on Wednesday and then got thrown out trying to stretch it to a double. I was like, man, the Mariners are really five tool for frustration right now. They can do it in so many different ways.
Five tool for frustration. Fair enough.
Victor Robles' suspension was reduced to 7 games on appeal. He started serving it last Friday, which means he has one game remaining in the opener of the series in Atlanta this weekend.
Great.
He's pretty good at defense, so he's got that going for him, which is nice.
probably be as negative value for the year.
Oh no. Yeah, I mean, I
Like
guess
pretty significantly, I think.
I do think like
They're just not a very good team. Like I don't.
well
That's kind of it. Like that is the place that we've gotten to is overall. Like they've got a lot of competent players on the team and they have some great players, but somehow they're just not a very good team. Like they just don't play good.
I
And
mean,
so.
it also speaks to like one of the things that people like to always believe. It's like, oh, there's an obsession with like fixing the holes on a team. And it's like, oh, if we just fix what's wrong with this team, then we'll be amazing. But what often happens is you fix the holes, but something else becomes a hole. It's like a, you know, a plugging holes in a dam or something like that. And they did fix the offense between the offseason and the trade deadline. And then all of a sudden, water started pouring through the pitching staff. Like the theory of this team with the pitching staff being average at best, it just doesn't work. So.
I don't blame anybody necessarily. I mean, look, maybe this is Dan Wilson's fault. I don't know. It's kind of one of
I
those
don't think
situations.
it's.
If I am Jerry Depoto, I'm like, there's clearly enough talent on this team. Like, and that's the thing about Fangraphs,
Not
where
in
you're
the
like,
bullpen. There's clearly enough talent in the
but
starting
it
rotation.
is not the bullpen. I'm talking about the whole roster, though.
I.
It has sometimes been the
Fine,
bullpen
but
that's let them down, but it's also the starting rotation.
yes.
It's both. If I'm Jerry Depoto, I'm basically looking at this as just like, what the fuck can I do?
Yeah, he's probably frustrated. Tree to put on shit doesn't work in humidity.
Honestly, it's like I don't know if you've seen the forecast. I think it does look humid tomorrow, but I hate
Oh, dear.
humidity, by the way. This is in Seattle, not in Atlanta. I'm sure it's hot as fuck in Atlanta, but Seattle, it's basically like tomorrow it becomes fall.
Wait,
And
really?
yeah, I think so.
That's not
There's
what
like an
my
80
forecast
degree.
said out here on the coast.
What's going on over there on the coast? Tell me more.
Partly cloudy, high of 79 the next 2 days.
I'm seeing that as, yeah, okay, fine. We'll give it until Sunday. Sunday it
I
becomes
mean,
fall.
troublingly, it might become fall on Saturday. I was hoping it would hold out for Saturday, but it is what it is.
And Sunday there's like thunder showers possibly in the forecast. Always fun.
Yeah, I don't see that either. Very different forecast. Microclimates
But
here on the Felton cast.
once the Mariners return home, I think they're done with humidity.
Do you feel like Tampa is on the ocean?
On the ocean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
I guess I'm outvoted on this.
Do you
It came
not
up on
feel
the
like
Discord.
Tampa's on the ocean?
Because I don't think the Caribbean or the Gulf Coast, to me, it's not really the ocean. If you're talking about the ocean in Florida, you mean the east side?
I hear what you're saying. You're saying that it's basically like we don't call Puget Sound the ocean.
Well, it is definitively not an ocean, but yes.
Doesn't Puget Sound connect to the ocean eventually, though?
Yeah, I mean all salt water, I think does. I get dangerous Peltoncast geography territory here.
I mean, I hear what you're saying because you're like, it's on the west side, therefore it connects to the Gulf of America.
If we're not using that term around here.
You not think Cuba's on the ocean?
No.
Okay.
It's in the Caribbean.
I'm just going to throw this out there that I don't care.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, a very short roundup this week, as we have already discussed the Sounders. Seattle Reign playing the hated rival, San Diego Wave on Friday. Two teams combined for 25 shots, 9 on goals, but couldn't finish in a frustrating outcome for all the Wave fans who made their way up here for the game. Still unbeaten against San Diego all time in 6 meetings at Lumen Field, but the first time failing to secure full points. Reign played this one without Lynn Biondolo, who will miss a few weeks, according to manager Laura Harvey, to address a lingering knee issue. They're on the road Sunday at the Spirit as they continue battling for a playoff spot. Well, Seattle Storm, here's the good news. The magic number is down to 2 to clinch a playoff
Oh, I
spot.
thought you were going to say the season's almost over.
Oh, I'm not that down on the Storm. I mean, after we recorded last week,
You have
after I was
never been that
out.
down on the Storm. You've been, like I said, the Storm for you are the same as for me for like Husky football or something, where you're just like always positive about the situation no matter what. The team's like 5-6 for the year, and you're like, is Jed Fish better than Nick Saban? that's you.
Never said that.
I did.
So they, but after they lost me on Tuesday night, Thursday they're down, you know, I think almost 20 in the early second quarter against the Minnesota Lynx. Seems completely
I knew this game,
hopeless.
This one game was going to give you hope, though. I could feel it. I saw them win this game, and I was just like, oh, this is going to break Kevin's brain.
Now, they did make 16 three-pointers. It was not the most sustainable performance that we've ever seen, but they beat the best team in the WNBA easily, handily, on the road in a potential first-round playoff
defending
matchup.
Defending national champion Michigan. Comfortably.
that's a little bit different.
Comfortably beat them.
If
a team Nafisa that went on, to
was
beat,
out,
went on to beat Ohio State few weeks later.
It is all factually accurate, as you describe. And then they get to come home, get a couple of days off. They've won 5 out of 6. They've got a chance to, or they did win on Saturday. They beat the Chicago Sky, the lowly Chicago Sky, in a rather underwhelming performance, but without Dominique Malunga, who sat that one out with a left wrist issue. Monday night, hosting the LA Sparks, a chance to all but clinch a playoff spot, as they would have assured at least a tie in the season series with the Sparks. They would have assured at least a tie in the standings. And then the only way the Sparks could have beat them out was either a multi-team tie or edging them out in terms of record against teams 500 or better, which would have been unlikely. Storm up 17 early in the third quarter after the hot three-point shooting continued. And then the offense completely dries up in the fourth quarter. They are outscored 15-2 over the last 4:27, 11-0 to finish the game. And the LA Sparks win their third in a row against the Storm, who have extra motivation to beat the Sparks to try to keep them in the lottery, holding LA's 2026 first round pick.
Truly just a terrible loss for the Storm.
Tell people what you told me earlier.
Oh, I was on the treadmill and I was watching the first half of the game. I was like, ready to be locked into UNC TCU, which I determined not interesting enough. And I was like, all right, Storm Sparks, here we go. And so
Michael
I watched
Jordan
the first
also
half,
determined not interesting enough.
And I was ready. I just like got off. I didn't even think about the game again because I was like, they have it in hand. I'm not even going to think about this. Right. And I pulled up the very next day the box score and I was like, what happened?
What?
Who were you saying was having a good game? Ezzie Megbegor?
In the first half?
For the game.
I think Ezzie had a very good game. Did she not?
Worst plus minus of anybody on the team, but okay.
Plus minus is not that useful.
It is
a
factor. I mean, it's 11 points, 5 rebounds, 4 for 5 shooting. Like, and then the team was bad when she was on the court.
A lot of things happen when you're on the court. There's a lot of randomness involved. Oh man,
it was a bad game pretty much all around. For the Storm, I mean, Brittany Sykes did basically nothing in it.
She, I think, was, you know, kind of the, she did not play much during the fourth quarter, is Noel Quinn relied heavily on the 4 starters and Erica Wheeler to finish this one out. And the way that Brittany Sykes played in this one, I have a hard time blaming Noel Quinn for that one.
Do you feel like these are scheme issues at this point, though? Like, if you're not hitting threes and the offense is dried up, you have to have more of a plan than this. And I just feel like the team struggles offensively in a lot of ways that they probably shouldn't. And that they're definitely not getting the most from the parts that they have. How about that?
I would agree with that. It was an interesting contrast because LA was not shooting well in this game. And what happened is Kelsey Plum and Rekia Jackson just put their heads down and bowled to the rim and repeatedly got 3-point plays. And a big issue is, particularly with Malunga playing limited minutes due to 5 fouls.
Kelsey Plum shot 3 free throws. I mean, Rekia Jackson is 8 for 9, but...
But she had multiple, Plum had multiple N1s at a part of the game where the Sparks needed to maintain contact.
Well, let me tell you the thing that they're supposed to be well coached at, and that's defense.
I mean, they
so
are
if,
good at
so
defense
if you're
overall.
Like,
but
if you're
but
like, my, the good news is...
No, my argument is...
They
without
can't play
Malunga,
defense either?
They do not like physical contact. This is a team that starts 3 guards who are, you know... I mean, Gabby Williams is bigger, but they start 3 guards. They play a bunch
fouls
of undersized
in WNBA,
players.
Right? Or do you get... Yeah. Okay. Well, they didn't use the 6th one.
They did not. It is a fair argument. Ezzie Megbegor is undersized for
minutes.
A starting center.
If you're like, they can't... I mean, I understand her free throws weren't good. She was 2 of 6 from the line, but like...
And looked every part 2 of 6. Like, she looked uncomfortable.
Were they hacking her? Were they intentionally hacking her to get to the line? Then let her play. I mean, she still had 8 points on three or four shooting.
Yeah, her shooting from the field did not seem effective. It was only when she got to the line. She was wearing a wrap on her left wrist after being questionable for the game and missing the one on Saturday. I mean,
And she clearly wasn't in the game when things went way south.
so what I think would be my biggest criticism is that LA actually went small to finish this game. They put De'Ara Hamby at center, Rickea Jackson at power forward. Rickea Jackson loves the Storm do not have a good matchup for her. It's very interesting because Rickea Jackson is the player that the Sparks drafted with the pick the Storm traded them in 2024, the number four pick that got them in that trade, in addition to cap space, the 2026 lottery, first round pick from LA that is very likely to be in the lottery. So it's a fascinating thing.
Is it going to be a player better than Rickea Jackson? Because the reason they did it was to sign Nneka and Skylar, right?
So Rickea Jackson, advanced stats, pretty big disconnect from her public perception and her points per game. So I think in terms of advanced stats, the Storm will probably draft a better player than Rickea Jackson. In terms of public perception, they probably will not.
They also just have a chance. What pick was that? Three?
Number four.
Four. Okay. They also just have a chance to get a better pick. And so. Given the rest of the season, the Sparks lose the next game because other teams can beat them, not the Storm. It's going to be a lottery pick.
It's not going to be, but it looks like increasingly likely to be. So the magic number, but anyways, I would have been a little more creative. They had Ezzie Magbegor defending Rickea Jackson. That was not a good matchup. You could have stuck her on Julie Alamon, their point guard, who's not a strong outside shooter, and tried to kind of muck things up that way, I think would have been an interesting option for them.
Who runs the Storm front office?
Talisa Rhea is their GM.
Okay. Because I do feel like Talisa Rhea is probably looking around in a very similar way that Jerry DePoto is looking around and being like, we are a better team than this. Are they not a better talent? And I wonder if Seattle teams, at least the Huskies, win at home, but they're a better team than 22 and 20
Yeah.
overall talent wise.
Although you know what the win percentage translates to, I'm pretty sure.
54%.
54%.
This is not
Not the magic
baseball.
number in WNBA.
And the
No, definitely
WNBA,
not.
54% is not going to do any good.
So the Storm now, thanks to LA's loss at Atlanta, can clinch a playoff spot with no help from anyone else. They would need to beat New York, who is going through its own struggles right now. They failed several times to clinch a playoff spot before they finally did by virtue of Indiana losing on Tuesday night as the Liberty were losing at Golden State 66-58, their fourth loss in their last six games. Sabrina Ionescu has been sidelined during that stretch. We'll see if she makes it back to play in the Pacific Northwest on Friday after 2 days off. But the Storm have that one, and then they close out against the Golden State Valkyries, who all of a sudden are the team that's kind of running away with this three-team competition for sixth or four-team competition for sixth through eighth in the WNBA standings. They're a full game up on the Storm in the standings, two in the loss column now. So basically a must-win for the Storm if they want to get up to sixth. On Tuesday against the Valkyries. Although sixth versus seventh, we'll see. Atlanta and Vegas are right neck and neck for those two spots, and Phoenix is tied with the Aces. So it's unclear how much you're actually helping yourself by getting sixth instead of seventh, but still would probably rather win the game and have less stress going into the end of the regular season. So I don't know when we're recording next week, but it is possible that the Storm regular season is finished by that point. And we'll see
Okay.
where we are then. Sparks do have a very difficult remaining schedule. They have one more game. It's a road set at Atlanta on Friday night. Sunday, they are home to host Dallas, then at Phoenix next Tuesday, and they finish by hosting Las Vegas on the final night of the regular season. They have the most games in the shortest amount of time at the end of the season. The Storm have the fewest. So,
The Storm are going to be in. They're going to make the playoffs.
very likely. All right, UW football. We talked about Jonah Coleman. Now let's talk about this game in earnest. Since you had takes about the offensive line after
No, I
attending
don't know
this
if I
one,
said I had takes about the offensive
did
line.
you? I think you did. You had a perspective, maybe. They beat Colorado State 38-21 in their season opener, a game that was tied 21-21 midway through the third after a Colorado State touchdown drive. Huskies then kind of established control of the game, outscoring them 17-0 the rest of the way.
I got a little nervous for a
Yeah,
second,
just a tad.
but I think my overall takeaway from this is these games are always the same. Like every year, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's Michael Penix. It doesn't matter if it's a really good team. We always kind of find our way into these early season games against non-Power 2 conference teams and them being a little bit closer than we want them to be. And the Huskies absolutely dominating them in basically every statistical capacity. And
Well,
this
you
one.
could say that the commonality of the entire Jed Fish era is the Huskies dominating the opposing team, other than, the Penn States, Oregon States of the world in yards, and then not having the scoreboard reflect it, which is what it seemed like for a lot of this one.
I think this team is different for what it's worth. I think this team is a little bit different. I mean, Damon Williams is starting. Like, there's some of the shit that Damon was doing where it's just like, Will Rogers ain't doing that. And there was one point where I looked down and I was like, I think this was after the touchdown to like put them up 7 or something. And I was like, I suspect I'm going to pull up Damon's stats, which the ESPN in-game stats are just terrible now. Like the Gamecast version, was
I
it
think there might have
broken?
been some sort of an issue with the week one of the season.
Okay. I was like, I suspect I'm going to pull this up and Damon's stats are going to be absurd. And I couldn't see it. But even now, it's funny. QBR didn't love the game that much. And I think it's because of the fumble, which was not really his
Yeah,
fault.
a big factor.
I mean, the ball got snapped when he wasn't ready. So it's like, I mean, I guess you put everything on the quarterback in that situation. But like,
It's not really predictive going forward.
I mean, he was 18. It was a Damon Williams game. He was 18 of 24. The completion percentage was great.
It was his lowest completion percentage yet in his three starts.
Kind of incredible, right? And then he ran for 68 yards on 13 carries. Like,
90,
and he
10
got
times for 90
sacked.
yards if you take out the sacks,
Yeah, he got
yes.
sacked a few times in there as well. This was a dominating performance by Damon. And even beyond that, like the what having Damon in the game opens up for Jonah Coleman. Because like I said earlier, like there was meat left on the bone for Jonah. I mean, he ran for 177 yards, but it felt like he could have easily done more if they passed the ball pretty well. Like players were open throughout the game. There were a couple of sacks which just like, you can't take that. But it's week one. You know, like there's gonna be a little bit of rust. Even defensively, I felt like there were a couple of really bad mistakes that the defense made, but I didn't think that they were skill problems. And it was sort of just like there's gonna be mental lapses. All of these players are basically playing together for the first time. The corners look great. I mean, I will tell you a name who did not come up was Thad Dixon. And when you look at those two corners, like Alex McLaughlin looks great. Was he on the team last year? I swear I remember
No,
Alex McLaughlin being on the team.
transferred from
So
Northern Arizona.
it is kind of incredible because to me, I'm like Alex McLaughlin just building off what he did last year because I remember him being on the team.
Was your favorite part of Buda Olukta's season for the Huskies last year?
I will tell you, Budo does not seem like he was on the team last year because he was way better than any of the linebackers that were. The way that he moves and the speed that he has being right in the middle, it is notable. Also wearing number 3, he's just like he stands out on that defense. The only thing where I was like, this is going to be a problem is the pass rush just wasn't like they didn't have Colorado State in hell in this game. And, you know, I don't know if I know enough about Colorado State. Like, I think they schemed it up pretty fine. I mean, also, Braden Fowler-Nicolisi was like 17 of 32. It's not like he had a great game by any means. There were a
But
couple of.
you would like to see the pass rush be a bigger factor in that. That was primarily, I think, a product of the coverage and particularly the cornerback duo who allowed a combined one reception per Pro Football Focus via Christian Capel and
I mean, they're
Onwalla.
excellent, right? I mean,
Takari
obviously.
Davis looked so good.
They were 2 years younger and led Arizona to an incredibly good bowl win. So it's kind of like, we'll take it. I mean, I would love to get Jacob Manu back as well. That is the only thing. There are a couple of bits where it's like, this is gonna, running is gonna be harder when they get to Big Ten play. The pass rush is going to be necessary against good teams. And, but if you don't have pass rush, the next best thing you can have is really good corners. And having really good corners was great in this game. You know, like there wasn't a lot of separation. And then being able to run the ball, like the line, you just look at them and it's a radically, I don't think the line looked this good against bad teams last year.
That's where I'm at, yeah. I mean, and certainly the Pro Football Focus grades suggest that as well. Jahrua
What
Azzopardi
were their
rated
grades?
really well. John Mills had the best
Oh, Mills is
rating for any.
gonna be a dog. You got the Hatchet brothers and Mills, and I'm like,
I don't know if it was true freshman offensive lineman or all freshman offensive lineman, but one of those two for Mills. So, Yeah, true freshman at 81 grade. Not how many of them actually were playing in week one, particularly in Power Two conferences, is unclear, but still
Well,
a terrific start.
is that for everybody though? Because I'm sure that there were a lot of true freshmen starting across the country. You know, there's 100 teams.
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel much better about the offensive line. Like, you take that, and then you have Carver Willis as well. Like, it looked
The
different.
sacks that Damon Williams Jr. did take were probably more a product of him holding the ball than the kind of constant pressure that he was in under against Oregon,
It's
for
Colorado
example.
State. Like,
Yes.
you can't compare those two. And so I think that the main takeaway after the game was it was a kind of as expected, this game. Denzel Boston is awesome. Jonah Coleman is awesome. Damon Williams is awesome. And the line looked better. The defense, like, they're gonna give up points. They're gonna get run on over this next year. Like, the Huskies are gonna have to outscore some of these Big Ten teams. And but also, when you think about it, a lot of the running backs that they faced last season are now in the NFL, and some of them are very promising in the
Some of them are on
NFL.
my fantasy team.
It was a pretty good class of running backs across college football, and there's still good running backs in the Big Ten, obviously, but like, the secondary tier of teams, those backs are not going to be as strong. Like, the Huskies have ended up in a pretty nice situation right now, and as long as, like, the offense looks like it looks, they're going to have to outscore a bunch of these teams, but I think they have the capability to do that. They could have had so many more points in this game.
We haven't specifically talked about Denzel Boston other than you mentioning him. 5 catches and 7 targets for 92 yards and a touchdown, a terrific catch on the touchdown.
Me and Chris
Yeah.
both saw him drop the ball. I was
Oh.
like, it's an incomplete pass. There's a flag, though. And there's something about the angle, because it was right in front of us. It was in front of us to the left. And I literally saw the ball come out, and I never with more confidence had said that he dropped the ball.
It came out when he spiked it.
But
2 catches for true freshman receiver Desmond Roebuck, who got a little bit more action because
I didn't really know who he was. I was like, who is that guy? 81, right? Is Roebuck?
that sounds right. Penn State transfer Omari Evans did not play in this one. Jed Fish said that he will play this weekend.
Okay, he was hurt, because I was like, has he
Yeah.
just not been on the field?
No,
And
no.
then the Rayne Finds-Bright, I was a
Got
little
the start in
surprised.
the slot. Was listed as the starter back when we thought that Evans was going to play in this one. We'll
I
see,
think he
how
had
that changes going forward.
one target, I want to say.
He had a carry, correct?
Oh, it was a carry that he had. Okay. I mean, they're trying to get him the ball, but I was kind of expecting a little bit more from him. It was also, he's a true freshman.
It's one game,
His first
but
ever
it's a
game.
long season. You mentioned the run defense. Redshirt freshman Jalen Dupree had 15 carries for 92 yards, including the 15-yard touchdown late in the first half, when Colorado State elected to run it with no timeouts remaining. They checked into a run based on the Huskies' personnel, a risky play that worked out. Huskies didn't have a lot of pass rush, but did have 5 tackles for loss in this game. They picked up. This is one of the things I believe is, like, you know, we've seen this a lot with the Seahawks over the years. Like, somebody will start out running really amazingly in the first half, and then by the end of the game, okay, maybe they're at 5 yards per carry, but no one ever stays at like 6 yards per carry on the ground against you. Eventually, that's gonna regress to the mean.
I mean, there are going to be some people in Big Ten play who are, but nobody
I
from
mean,
Colorado
sure.
State is.
Or nobody in the NFL. All right, this weekend, UC Davis coming to town. FPI win
Apparently,
probability.
they have a football team.
Oh,
You don't feel like the
you don't know
UC
about
Davis
the
football team, the Broncos, right?
No, they're the Aggies, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
Start of the season ranked in number 8 in the Stats Perform FCS top 25. They lost at South Dakota in the quarterfinals last year in the first year for former quarterback Tim Plow is head coach. Returned 8 starters on offense and 5 on defense. They faced number 11 Mercer in the FCS kickoff classic in week 0, which was declared no contest due to weather, but they were leading at the time against a top and number 11 opponent. Then they trailed at Utah Tech 24-7 in the second quarter last Saturday before scoring 24 unanswered to win. They did get some road experience for their new quarterback, redshirt freshman Caden Pinnick, who went 21 of 31 for 253 yards and 3 touchdowns with an interception on Saturday. Was sacked 6 times despite playing behind 5 returning offensive line starters. Sophomore Jordan Fisher ran for a career-high 105 yards in that one, and the Davis defense recovered 2 fumbles and had 2 interceptions, which I will take the under on that this weekend.
You have to wonder if the Huskies are better than Utah Tech.
I'm pretty sure Utah Tech recruited Ray Allen and he got game.
Colorado State, I have to say, I was like, they're like a fairly well-coached team.
I mean, Gene Orvello is like a notable coach. Like he's been around. He's been done some things. So, anything in particular looking for this Saturday?
Just getting through the game. That's it. I do I remember Jay Norvell from playing? I do not. He's really old. Head coach of Nevada. I'm trying
Yeah,
to
you
think of.
couldn't remember him from playing. Did he coach Kaepernick? That's the one thing I was wondering about. I did not look that up
No, this
last
was
week.
pre-Kaepernick, 2017 to 2021.
Okay.
Or not
Yeah.
pre-Cap. Pre-Kaepernick was pre
Post
him being there.
Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was there for a while. I'm still questioning, is Nevada to Colorado State? Is that an upgrade? I don't know. I guess Colorado State is in the Pac-12 next year. Is
That is true.
Nevada going to the Pac-12?
No, it's all state teams. You don't know this?
Oh, right, of course.
No, Nevada's not going. UNLV, Nevada decided not to go. I don't know if Nevada even had an offer, but
Right. Percentage chances of victory?
100%.
I was there for Montana. It's never 100%. I'm gonna go 97.
Jimmy Lake is not walking through that door. This is Damon Williams against UC Davis. Again, it's just like, let's just get through this. Let's go play the Apple Cup. Apple Cup looks very different. I guess it's some thoughts across the country like that. Wazoo in year two and Oregon State, although I think statistically Oregon State was better than the outcome of that game. Those two teams are feeling it a little bit more. Last year, they didn't feel the full breadth of not being in the Power Conference, and now I think they are. That is the type of game they're going to get up for the Huskies. I just think talent-wise, it's not even close. So, kind of a fascinating one. I feel like the season really starts. It's all preseason, these 3 games. It feels very like NFL, and then all of a sudden, boom, Ohio State. So, the other takeaway that I had was people were really down on Arch Manning in Texas, right? Texas way outplayed Ohio State, and there was defensively, Ohio State is probably pretty good, but they still gave up a good chunk of yardage. And I don't think there was anything that happened in that Ohio State game that made me think to myself, this is an unbeatable team for UW.
I think they're gonna be a pretty hard team to beat. Now, one thing I
I
did
didn't say
come to
they I
get.
didn't say they weren't going if what we're starting at is unbeatable.
So you're saying that they have a better UW has a better chance of beating Ohio State than UC Davis has of beating
Yes.
UW.
Yes.
One thing I is a core belief of mine, dating back to when Ken Dorsey in Miami came to Husky Stadium in the year 2000 and suffered their only loss in a 3 year span. I don't know what exactly what the timetable was, but obviously they
It
went
was their
undefeated the
last
rest of the
loss before they
2000
went on like
season.
a 40-game win streak or
They
something.
went undefeated in 2001, and then 2002 was the year that the season where they lost to Ohio State in the bowl game.
Craig
And
Krenzel, is that right?
it sounds right.
Okay.
Maurice Claret, obviously. Anyways, that was Ken Dorsey had started some home games at home, but he had not started a road game and he was not ready for Husky Stadium. And I felt like there was an element of that with Arch Manning, which is also interesting because I'm going to have to assume that Julian Sain has not started a road game. There's not one on their schedule before they come to Husky Stadium.
I gotta pull that up to see if Ohio State plays a road game beforehand.
I can't imagine. How, like, they're Ohio State. If they don't, we weren't playing a.
Yeah, no, it's their first road game. And I mean, it's Grambling in Ohio that they play before then. Obviously, like Texas is a bigger test
He
than
didn't
any.
play literally the number one team in the country.
They won the game, but they got outplayed. And that's almost the worst way to win, I guess is what I'll say. Because.
I don't think they're resting on their laurels because of it.
But you do leave a little bit with the bravado of it, of we just beat the number one team in the country. but they probably shouldn't have won the game. I mean, I've told you this, to me, the most important thing, and the reason that I was very skeptical about a lot of even the ranking of Texas at number one, there were a lot of very inexperienced quarterbacks, including Julian Sain, the current quarterback for the number one team in the country.
Correct.
And it's like DeMond, he's still young. He got put through the fire a little bit last year.
Started a road game.
And what I said was, like, all of these teams got hyped, but to me, like, some of the actual best teams, at least at this part of the season, were LSU, were Clemson, teams that had more experienced quarterbacks, Penn State, people like
Miami.
that. A lot of those teams won when they weren't playing each other, and they won games against teams. Like, they get really excited about stuff when they're talking about it. And same with, right, Ty Simpson, I assume that was his first road start. I think it was his first start at all. And they went in and lost to Florida State. Like, people just get a little too excited when there are players this young. You talk about road games not mattering. That's baseball. Maybe it's a lot of other professional sports. In college football, road games matter. And also, in the same way that I think Seahawks fans have been pretty despicable for the last couple of years, Husky fucking Stadium was full on Saturday night for
Oh,
Colorado State.
there wasn't a lot of Montana, Colorado State
Not, no,
fans there.
that's not what I'm saying. There were a few
I
Colorado
know.
State fans. There weren't a lot of empty bleachers there. I was shocked. I expected to walk in. We were stuffed in there in the East End zone.
Wow.
I mean,
That's
granted,
kind of
we had like
shocking.
14 people across three seats, but it was not comfortable. And the East End zone was completely full. The only places were the very top of the chomping teeth were the like very, very top. There were some open seats. And then the student section, because students aren't in school yet. And I assume
Correct.
school starts like right before Ohio State. So
It seems likely.
it is, I UW Husky Stadium, more than people realize, it is a little bit louder. It was a little bit louder for Colorado State than I thought. And there's a little bit more excitement around the team than people are giving it credit for. Because there were games when Chris Peterson was the head coach against similar types of opponents that weren't that full. So
Well,
I was impressed.
do you think there's more excitement than people realize about the Seattle Seahawks heading into their
No,
season opener?
I don't.
Oh, no.
I think there's a lot of excitement from San Francisco 49ers fans.
That does seem very plausible. If you haven't already, please listen to our season preview with Ben Baldwin, as well as you alluded to in the Mariners Hot Takes, our interview last week with Mike Sean Dugar about his book in the Legion of Boom era. That was really fun to get into. So a lot of great Seahawks content out there, but we have not specifically previewed week one against the San Francisco 49ers, and it's time to get into that. 49ers coming off a 6-11 season after 3 consecutive years with 10 plus wins that culminated in their second Super Bowl loss to the Chiefs. They finished 11th in offensive EPA per play. This is higher than I would have guessed if you would have told me this. It was the defense that dropped to 26, despite Christian McCaffrey playing just 4 games and Brandon Ayuk suffering an ACL tear in week 7. So the offense was still hanging in there, was still pretty dangerous, and now they get Christian McCaffrey back in the lineup for what he hopes certainly will be a full season, but probably almost by definition has to be a healthier season than 2024.
Well, I think that's sure, that's fair, but I don't think the thing that we should be looking at necessarily is the offense. Like, Kyle Shanahan's going to have good offenses as long as he has a quarterback. You know what I mean? This is the person who has Nick Mullins with some of the greatest stats in NFL history. So
At least against the Seahawks. I mean, but I feel like that's all the discussion point about the 49ers is their offense
it's
and
not
that.
the number of players that they lost on defense. Do we think Fred Warner alone is just enough? Like, Hufanga, Dre Greenlaw, Aaron Banks, Charvarius Ward,
I
like
mean, they do still have Nick Bosa. He's pretty good too.
yeah, but that's not what a defense makes. You know what I mean?
I
Like,
agree.
a
We
defense is not.
talked about the 2018 through 2020 Seattle Seahawks, who still had Bobby Wagner.
A defense is not one Fred Warner and one Nick Bosa. Also, like, getting further into their careers, right? Neither of them are young players right now.
But I think, as we talked a lot about in the over-under section of the season preview pod, like the situation you want to be in is good offense and bad defense if you're projecting forward to the next year, because defense is just so much more variable from 1 year to the next. And they did go out and draft Mykel Williams, Georgia edge, with their number 11 pick. As I've learned from the Eagles, step one, draft Georgia defenders. Step three,
I think there were a few people who thought it
championship.
was a reach, for what it's worth, on Mykel Williams as a draft pick. This is his first ever game. So, like, if we're talking about the 49ers overall, sure, maybe. But, like, is he going to replace Javon Hargrave? You know what I mean? Like,
I
are they
mean, Javon
going to.
Hargrave was part of that. He missed all but four games last year due to a triceps injury.
And their defense was bad.
Yeah.
It's just the turnover on defense. I think people are underrating it a little bit, and the Niners are in a situation where I get I'm. It's why this game is fascinating, because we've been talking all offseason: Seahawks defense, 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 49ers offense. Mike McDonald was hired for this game. There are
I mean,
four games per year that Mike McDonald was hired for, and this is one of them, and it's week one.
it's also fascinating because we've been talking about how good are the 49ers going to be next season since last December, probably. Like, it's been obvious that they were going to get healthier and that they were going to get this fourth place schedule that, again, as we talked about on the season preview pod, is the second easiest in the entire NFL.
So I thought I would have, like, I think we probably talked about this last year. I was like, pencil in the Niners as an over for the following season. First off, Vegas is aware of it. Second off, we didn't know necessarily just how decimated the defense would be.
I mean, I think we could have predicted a little bit because one of the things we did know was coming was the Brock Purdy extension that happened this offseason. That was
Exactly. There's the Brock Purdy extension and the receiving core, right? Like, with Ayuk injured, and it's a pretty big question mark. At this point, you could say that they can just basically slot in anybody, but I'm not sure if they've been able to do that necessarily.
so the other guy that they lost as part of the cap reshuffling was Debo Samuel, who they traded to the Commanders. So Ayuk's still out with that ACL injury from last year. DeMarcus Robinson, who they signed away from the Rams, is suspended to start the season. Juwan Jennings has been a limited participant in practice due to a calf injury. Although, just before we recorded this on Wednesday night, my ESPN colleague Adam Schefter reported that he came to a reworked contract with the 49ers. So it'll be interesting to see how that
It seemed to
affects
make
his
Micah Parsons very
availability.
healthy.
It's a remarkable coincidence. So, Jennings and Ricky Pearsall are listed as their starters with Russell Gage Jr. and Sky Moore behind them. And we do know Marquez Valdes-Scantling will be elevated to the active roster from their practice squad. Week
Wow,
one revenge
a
game
mole
for
for the team.
MVS. You're viewing it that way? Like the Mariners tried to Rangers the Niners? Well, the
No, no, no,
Mariners.
no. I think it's the other way around.
Oh,
He knows
okay.
our secrets.
Yeah, okay. Also, one thing I did not realize until I was glancing at this depth chart, even before I started, even as we were recording the pod, do you remember who the offensive coordinator is for the San Francisco 49ers?
The offense, is it another Kubiak?
It is Clay Kubiak.
Clay Kubiak.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, piece of this we didn't mention, by the way, about the 49ers on defense is you know who they
Robert
did
Saleh.
add this ad
Yeah.
offseason? Yes, Robert Saleh.
I don't. Robert Saleh, when Robert Saleh got the job with the Jets from the 49ers, same with DeMeco Ryans, they had a lot more defensive talent than they have right now. You're talking about Niners teams that were basically not paying quarterbacks in the same way that both of them got jobs from. And they just were able to have way more depth. I think they drafted better in those time periods, right? So, like,
Well, they traded a lot of those draft picks. I mean, Brock Purdy has covered up some of the sins of the Trey Lance, trade, but he can't tr cover all of them.
I don't think a defensive coordinator on their own is going to be, obviously, Clint and Clay Kubiak.
But what about two defensive coordinators? Because they also added Gus Bradley this offseason, our
Oh,
old
well,
friend.
that changes everything. These two teams know each other very well. And
They do.
they've been able to. Here's what I'll say is that I love Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll is probably the greatest coach in Seahawks history. Pete Carroll was not ready for this kind of fight
I mean, it's funny
against the
because
49ers.
he actually was generally, I guess, in the Jimmy Garoppolo era, yes. In the Brock Purdy era, very much no,
And
I
there were
guess is
some
the way I
games
would
where it
put
was
it.
just like, they have it figured out, dog. You know what I
I
mean?
mean, like, as
There was
shocking as it
one game
was
that they
on.
beat Garoppolo, I want to say. Maybe it was Purdy, where it was like a great win and it felt really good, but it was just like, it's like skin of their teeth. You know what I mean? Like, if things go wrong, it's gonna have to be the 49ers who are the reason that the things went wrong. But like, they had Pete's shit figured out. Kyle Shanahan knew it. And I'm telling you, that is why Mike McDonald's the coach. John Schneider looked around the NFC
Yeah.
West and was like, there's Sean McVay, there's Kyle Shanahan. We have to be able to combat these two coaches. If Mike McDonald can do it with his defense, then it's sort of like a realization of, you know, it's proof of concept for what they were talking about. It's Mike McDonald's defense in year two. It is this Clint Kubiak offense that looks a little bit better. And if they could slow down the Niners, I am a little bit less convinced that the offense is going to be amazing from the Niners, even just from the jump, the overall season-wise. But also, all of these people have had a long time to think about this game. Mike McDonald has had a long time to think about this game. Same with Kyle Shanahan.
I believe that last year was the first time the Seahawks ever defeated the Niners with Brock Purdy at quarterback. Because when they beat them in 2022, it was Trey Lance, you'll recall, starting the game at San Francisco, and then Jimmy G starting the game back in Seattle. And then 2023, Niners went 3-0, including the playoff game. And 2022, they went 3-0, including the playoff game. I don't know, whatever year that was, they went 3-0, including the playoff game. And then the 2023 matchups were the completely lopsided games that, as you're talking about, kind of signaled that Pete Carroll had no answers.
Kind of signaled?
Entirely.
There was a
signaled.
Fucking
Fine.
Bat signal on the entire city. There was no kind of signal. That was it.
Pretty 4-1 career against the Seahawks, for the record. In I guess that's regular season only. And then the win in the playoffs, too.
So 5-1 against the Seahawks. And that one loss was Mike McDonald at San Francisco last year, right?
Yep. So yeah, it was last November.
I mean, there's going to be a lot to pay attention to. Like, week one is such a hard week to be playing this game. I think it's a good thing for the Seahawks, for what it's worth, that they're playing this game in week one. But because their offense is going to be the most new of all of these different position groups between both of the teams. Clay Kubiak is the offensive coordinator of the 49ers. They understand what Clint Kubiak is trying to do.
And should also note that Sam Darnold spent a year there, as yes. We discussed on the preview pod.
Yeah, there's a lot of relationship between these two things, but I do think the Seahawks offense is the thing that is going to be the hardest to get on film, right? Going into it. Mike McDonald's going to know what the 49ers are trying to do. It's not going to be that different.
Yeah. Do you want to go percentage chances of victory here?
I think the wrong team is favored in this game. And I told you, I was a little surprised that
that team being favored, the San Francisco 49ers, by 2.5 points.
I was a little surprised. And again, I think it's part of bettors and Vegas is seeing this as the offense is healthy. And maybe they're right. The offense is healthy. It's Kyle Shanahan. All things being equal, there's probably more talent on the Niners. Maybe. I don't know. There's definitely more talent on them offensively, but the Seahawks are winning this game, and I think they're winning it comfortably.
Wow.
I'm not even necessarily saying that is what it's going to be like for the entire season with them, but I think this defense is going to come out and really stifle the 49ers offense, and it's going to be exciting to see it happen. It's going to be like, wow, we're really doing this. Right now, they're going to have one of those like 14 play drives that we saw during the preseason against the Chiefs, where it's just like marching, 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 marching. If the line looks as good as it looked during the preseason, like there's Nick Bosa be damned. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be able to move the ball against this 49ers defense. So I think it's going to be a little bit of like a old school Pete Carroll type of game. Like we probably won't have a ton of possessions in it. I think it's going to be a few possessions type game. They're going to matriculate the ball and win by a couple of scores. So I don't know. I'm going to say 70% chance of winning.
70? That might be as far from Vegas as you've ever been in the entire history of this podcast.
I don't know. 70. I don't want to be so confident about it and then be like 53%.
I mean, obviously the joke would be 54%. I do think that there's going to come in. Money is going to come in on the Seahawks late on this one. I think the line will be down to 1 or 1.5 by kickoff time. That's a bold prediction from me. I don't know. This is a prediction. I guess that probably doesn't count as a bold prediction.
I just don't know how much they move lines. Really,
is the ombudsman
versus
They move lines.
Just moving the money, but
I am going to say 50-50. These all things are before the start of the season.
that's really
Everything
like
is
a
a no vote.
pretty nice cop out there.
I predict a tie. Then
Then you have to predict it's a 33% chance of victory.
I
33% chance victory, 33% chance lose, 33% chance tie.
I predict for soccer
Give him
matches.
the 34 for victory, though. Come on.
Wow. Terrific.
50-50. You don't feel like you have any read at all in this game?
I mean, I think that is a read. I mean, that's saying that the Seahawks have a better chance than the market thinks they have. Even my bold prediction for the market.
They also
So.
played terribly at home last year. 49ers fans are going to, it's going to be heavily 49ers fans at this game. And I don't know if there's really much of a home field advantage for the Seahawks at all,
I
but
don't know that there's really much home field advantage in the NFL.
I'm
Like,
not
it's
sure,
been
but
declining pretty considerably over time. It's interesting that ESPN.com is now listing the season as 2025-26, which I think makes sense, but it's an
they play
interesting
a
change.
lot of games in 2026 now.
It's true. I
Or
guess
the
they were
following
above
year.
500 at home in 2023, believe it or not.
Home teams?
No, the Seahawks.
In 2020, above 500? What is the overall home field advantage across the league? Are you able to find that quickly?
No.
Okay, sounds good.
I mean, it's a hard stat, man.
I thought it would be something that somebody would have just, you could just Google it and somebody would have it quickly.
All right, maybe there's a site here. This is tracking it from gambling perspective, and it says that by the end of last season, it was 1.9 points per game. And that the standard line is 2.5, but it hasn't been above that since 2018. Because we do know in all sports there's a trend towards lower home field advantage due to some combination of more replay, better, more objective refereeing, it would be due to training, more home visiting fans attending due to the resale market. Better travel accommodations, that sort of thing. So there's your stew.
Great. College still exists. Pretty fun.
Yes, I look, I'm on the record. I think sports should be trying to encourage as much home field advantage as possible.
I
Not as
also
much
think
possible, but more home field advantage than currently exists.
college football is more fun than the NFL now.
That's probably true. But you haven't watched Red Zone yet this season.
Fair enough.
Not that you will on Sunday, but at some point you will,
I'm going to 2
and
in the
you'll be
morning.
back in.
Off the
You'll have
morning of
time.
Red Zone. Yeah, sometime. All right. Well,
On that note,
thanks for listening.
enjoy week one.
Who's on my team? Josh Allen? This isn't my team, is it? Oh, this is Mateo's team.
You
You just lied. I'm like, damn, this is a pretty good team.
saw the number of Eagles.
There's a couple, but I was like, Josh Allen, Saquon? I'm down with that. Where's my? Oh, I'm logged in on this. Okay. Yeah, I was like, sign me up. I think I have Lamar on both teams, though. I do have to sign out of this, though. I was just like, yesterday, I was like, everybody, the
Wait, do
NFL
you
season
have
starts tomorrow.
any thoughts on our draft? Because you ended up joining the league that I am actually in at the last minute since we had an open spot that I forgot to announce on this podcast last week.
I feel like, no, we didn't have an open spot. To me, the bigger question is, do you have thoughts on it? Because you're the one who made this, like, your complicated projection system.
It's not, I mean, it's decently complicated. I mentioned on the over-unders, I'm all in on the Cowboys offense.
I was kind of in on the cow. I mean, I think I might have drafted George Pickens in both leagues.
I almost took George Pickens to go with CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott, but I was like, that's maybe putting a few too many eggs in this. I was devastated with where Justin Fields went. I thought for sure I could snag him late to go with Dak Prescott as my QB combo. That was the do you want me to list my targets by round?
Yeah.
Let me pull up my projections here.
I want to hear how many of them were players that I was kind of like, I would like that player.
So ran one. I didn't have anyone specific. I just thought I would take a wide receiver. Ended up taking CeeDee Lamb. Round two, I wanted Josh Jacobs or Brock Bowers. Neither of those guys were out there by the time I drafted, so I took Jonathan Taylor.
I wanted Brock. I saw you take Jonathan Taylor. I wanted Brock Bowers, but it was just like it didn't work out. I had basically the same pick on both drafts. Like I had like shockingly similar drafts.
Round three, I was hoping for Alvin Kamara, who ended up going with the top to Chris with the top pick of round two. Kind of shocking. So that's where I ended up taking
I think
Kyren
you just
Williams.
did yourself a favor there.
I mean, by round three, I think he was worth it, just in terms of.
You're not going to want to watch the friggin' Saints and be
I
cheering for.
understand it. Round four, I had targeted DJ Moore and Mike Evans. I decided that I could wait on that a little bit. I took DJ Moore at the top of round five and took DeAndre. Mike Evans was off the board, so I took DeAndre Swift in round four. Got full up at running back because I felt like some wide receivers, there was better wide receiver value late. Round six, I had a rookie running back targeted. I ended up moving up David Njoku. I was hoping to get later because tight ends were going earlier than I thought, so I kind of read that one. Round seven, I took Jerry Jeudy, who I
Kind of a
drafted.
steal for Jerry Jeudy in round seven.
Right. Round eight, one of the aforementioned Big Ten running backs the Huskies lost to, Caleb Johnson from Iowa for the Steelers, is
I
my
think I was
speculative.
pissed when you took Caleb Johnson.
That was right before you took Javonte Williams, speaking of loading up on Dallas.
There was some player who you took that I was really upset about.
Then I got Dak in round nine. Round 10, Xavier Leggett. Xavier Leggett? I forgot how
Yeah.
that's pronounced.
Yeah.
Was it Jaden Blue when I took him in round 11? That was part of my
I think it
Dallas.
might have been Caleb Johnson who I wanted.
That seems most likely. Joe Mixon, I wanted to draft someone injured. That was my target. I was hoping to get Chris Godwin. I think he ended up going a little bit before. Yeah, he went three picks ahead of me in the 10th round. I wanted to draft someone injured to put on IR, so I got Joe Mixon. And then my speculative backup quarterback pick was Cam Ward.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you could get Cam Ward off the waiver wire, probably. Like,
I mean, perhaps. You know, I ended up picking up off the waiver wire. I was kind of shocked got dropped was the Ravens defense.
there was somebody who I wanted to add today, actually.
The
Are we
Ravens
able
have
to
a
add
very
players
tough
now?
week one matchup against the Bills, but thankfully my defense draft pick was strictly for week one. It was the Cardinals who are facing the Saints.
Woody Marks. Mike Gesicki. Wait, who was that that I was looking at? There was some receiver that they were listed that looks like they're not on. It looks like they're on a team. But there was some receiver who was listed as a starter where I was like, huh. Oh, it was for the Titans.
I mean, are you talking about Elik Aiemanor?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I was looking at their depth chart today, pursuant to our Tyler Lockett discussion.
But
And he is
he
starting.
already got drafted. He got drafted somewhere.
Elik Aiemanor, most famous for a game-winning catch against Colorado, I believe, a couple years ago in Dion's first season, back when the Pac-12 was still a thing.
I mean, he had like one of the best games in Pac-12 history.
Yeah. I guess maybe it wasn't a game-winning catch. Maybe it was just that game. Yeah. Stanford record for receiving yards in a game.
294.
13 of 294, but he did have the overtime catch over Travis Hunter. So that undoubtedly is what I was thinking of.
Who I drafted.
Yeah, that was probably a stay away from me.
It was like, whatever. This will be fun. I mean, at that point, I'm kind of like, you're just taking kind of like fairly
Speculative.
extreme flyers. I mean, I wanted Braylon Allen. I don't think I got Braylon Allen in the other league. And I was definitely wanting him. I think I have Tank Bigsby in both. But that like tier of those running backs, Jordan Mason, I was kind of like, I feel like Jordan Mason might have a pretty good season. Former 49er.
Yeah, we did not talk about him in the 49ers losses.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean they can make another Jordan Mason. Did I get Marvin Harrison in both leagues? I did. I mean, there's kind of nothing about Marvin Harrison that reeks of not going to be good to me this year.
I
And I
can
felt like
think of some things.
that territory. I didn't get a mecha. I wanted a mecha Ibuka. My teams actually look more different than I thought they would. I think
Mateo grabbed the Mecha
a mecha.
Ibuka, right?
I think I have Javonte Williams on both teams and Lamar on both teams. And that's it. Which I like. I don't. Lamar was just like, I felt like he was kind of a steal in that territory. And just slotting in those points. But
The model is very clear that you should not draft quarterbacks high. Because there's just not enough difference between them and the quarterbacks that you can get late. So we'll see how I feel about that after a season of Dak Prescott. Although, one of the things you can do at running quarterback is find somebody during the season. I think Sam Darnold might have been that guy for me on one of my teams last year.
yeah, no, he was pretty good fantasy wise. There was still like a massive difference between Lamar. I mean, maybe year over year, it's hard to predict, but points wise, there was a massive difference between Lamar and say like Sam Darnold or whatever. Like the difference between number one and number eight was pretty huge. I finally got Bill, Jacquory Crosky Merritt. I don't know if I like the idea of him starting for me, but I really was just like, I don't know, the players just go away so fast. And you're like,
Every minute or so, really.
but you know what I mean? You're just like, all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where you're like, fuck, I'm starting Jacquory Crosky Merritt. It could just happen so quickly.
I was the guy, the other guy I was very upset to get drafted ahead of me. I mean, this was five picks, so it wasn't that close, was Charbonnet.
I definitely wanted Sharp too.
I originally had him written down in round seven, ended up taking Judy there since he was still out there and hope to get Charbonnet in round eight.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but like the my team is basically both of my teams are basically down a wide receiver or a quarterback or a wide receiver or running back because I took Lamar in both leagues. So I'm basically like one of those positions, it's going to be somebody worse. I don't know. I've done the thing that you did many, many times before of waiting on a quarterback, and I've felt like it has never, I mean, it's worked out for me sometimes, but I've never ended up with a player. Rarely ended up with a player where I'm like, just slot them in and I feel good. I don't have to think about this position. And I know that I'm going to get like upwards of the best points in the league. Because a poor quarterback performance can just, you just lose the game. Like you could do pretty well at almost everywhere else. And if you get like a five from your quarterback, you're just fucked. Right? But I'm like, between Bijan and Gibbs, I'm kind of like, it's
You did
one
get
of those.
Teteroa McMillan this time.
Yeah, I got Tet. Oh, no, it's, yeah, Marvin Harrison. We'll see. I actually feel like Marvin Harrison could be like a top 10 fantasy wide receiver.
You were lured in by the siren song of Kyle Pitts Sr.
I was just like, whatever. I didn't have a tight end, and I was at the place where I couldn't draft any more bench players. And there was Kyle Pitts, and I'm like, sure, sign me up. It is, I feel like Kyle Pitts has maybe become even like slightly underrated because of how frustrating he's been.
My model did not indicate he is underrated.
He's become appropriately rated.
All right.
Yeah, there's like Caleb Williams is rostered on 77% of teams.
People are very into Caleb Williams with Ben Johnson. Not everyone's taking the under on that one. Oh, I told you there was a Miami running back I was interested in. I didn't end up drafting him, but
Yeah, who was
Ollie Gordon the second. I saw him have a nice carry in their preseason game when I had that on.
it? There we go. Your projection system can't factor that in.
I mean, the projection system is not of use in projecting which backup running backs are going to get a chance. I don't use it for that.
That's really funny. Where did they draft him? I remember kind of liking him college, sixth
Fifth
round.
round, I believe.
Sixth round, 179th overall. Yeah, their running backs in that territory are kind of just like sure. Okay. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.